Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna.
Live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lugeman. Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. And some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who?
Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week live. I plug my headset back in. From Latitude 30, across from the Avenues Mall, I'm Brian Sexton, along with John Osher from Jaguars.com, my broadcast partner, Jeff Lugeman, and of course, you all know Tony Boselli, don't you? Yep, right. Tony Boselli. Back after a week off. Well, not off. You were in Dallas working.
Three cities in 5 days.
Yeah, no. You're hardest working man in radio, just ask you.
I wouldn't go that far.
Our Metro PCS call-in line this evening, 800-355-NFL1. Certainly there is a lot to talk about. We're going to just talk about a win to get started. And then, you know, yesterday the Eagles, mid-afternoon, released Jason Babin, two-time Pro Bowler, 18 sacks a year ago. And I said, you know, just in my own head, well, that's a guy the Jaguars probably ought to go after. I didn't even think about the money. I didn't think about any of it. I just thought he has 5.5 sacks, which is more than twice what any Jaguars player has. That might be a good move. And, of course, they're sitting second in the waiver claim, so pretty much have the best shot at him out there.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about waiver claim is that it's according to current record, so the Jaguars second behind Kansas City. And last night, you know, I was doing work at home. I already wrote Jason Babin's information on my board.
It made that much sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, and the reason it makes sense is, first of all, there's zero risk. You're not going to have to give him a signing bonus. He is an elite pass rusher in the National Football League.
Say it again. Elite?
Think he's
still
elite?
I'm just saying,
he's a very good pass rusher.
Well,
he has been very productive the last couple of years.
He had 18 sacks last year.
You're right.
He's and then the year good. Before that, he had
10.
He had 12 and a half.
He had 12 and a half.
12 and a half, 18.
In 2010.
Right.
And he's got 5.5 this year, which looks pretty good on our
on a bad team.
Right.
Ignore everything before the 12 and a half. In the last 2 years, he's been an elite
rusher. You're right about that. And I've done three of their games this year. And I was actually there Monday night for the Carolina game and watched him on tape four other times. And he is a very good pass rusher. And he is very good with his hands. He knows how to get on the edge. He's just okay in the run, but you turn on the tape, and there's one thing that stands out immediately. Jason Babin knows how to rush the passer, and he has 5.5 sacks, but it would be interesting to go back and look at how many pressures he has, how many holding penalties he's caused. He's in the backfield a lot because he's one of those guys that he is not only talented as far as understanding the craft of pass rushing, because pass rushing isn't just how big or fast you are. It's understanding leverage and angles and hand use, and he's very good at that, and he plays hard, so he'll get there because he's always spinning, doing swim moves. He'll find a way to get there late even sometimes just because he outworks the offensive tackle he's going against.
But the reason it makes sense is that you're getting, in the last 2 years, an elite pass rusher.
Oh, you're right. If you have 30.5 sacks in 2 years, you're pretty dang good.
And there's zero risk. I mean, there's zero risk. You're assuming his contract, and his numbers are he gets, what, a million something remaining?
1.64 this year.
1.6 remaining in 5 weeks, which is that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Next year, his salary is right around 4.3, and then the 2 years after that are a hair over 6.1. And so you're talking for an elite or one of the best pass rushers in the league, that's cheap.
The reason I question the word elite is only because you don't use it very often.
No. But I'm not saying he's elite.
Well, I don't even care. Let's say this.
His
elite. Let's say he's not elite.
Even if he's just very good, he makes this pass rush better.
Here's the bottom line.
How about this?
He's better than what they've got.
I mean, forget elite. Forget very good. We'll take good right now.
Yes, we would. Yes, we would.
All right.
He's better than what they got right now. That's why it makes the most sense.
Well, look, you got Austin Lane.
And no risk.
Tyson. Terrence, CJ, and Jeremy Mincy all each have 2 sacks, and that's tied for the lead. And then you've got Mike Harris that has 1, and you've got
how many sacks do
Andre
we have
Branch?
Now for the
13,
year?
13. 13. 13. Look, and here's the deal. How many times did I turn to you on Sunday in the broadcast booth and say, how can you win when the quarterback can stand flat-footed.
Well, and it's not only
this is what Locker was doing last year.
He was having a cup of coffee and reading a newspaper.
And Jeff, right. And guys, it's not just how many sacks. Because I actually think sacks can sometimes be one of the most overrated statistics.
I used to say that all the time when I didn't have
when you didn't have
sacks.
But no, but in all seriousness,
a lot.
If you watch a game, even if guys aren't getting sacks and they're back, they're pressuring the quarterback, they're in his face, they're making a move off his spot, they're creating holding penalties by the offensive line. Those aren't sacks, but those are
they affect the play.
They're affecting the game, the outcome of the game. And if you watch the tape of the Jacksonville Jaguars defense, too often, it's such a clean pocket. There is nobody even near the quarterback affecting anything he's trying to do.
Right.
And that it makes it hard to cover on the back end when the quarterback has all day to scan the field and comfortably step up and throw the ball. It's tough to win that way.
I'm not sure anybody ever thought that Jeremy Mincy was a elite-level pass rusher, but if he has a guy opposite him who's playing well and you have to worry about, it could make him better.
Well, I don't know if that's the case because Jeremy needs – I mean, it's not like people are game-planning and sliding right now.
I understand.
To Jeremy, I mean, he is, for whatever reason, not playing at the same level he played at last year. And Jeff would be able to break that down better than me.
I just agree.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. So – you know, the bottom line is, even with getting Jason Babin, which I think is a great job by Gene Smith, it's a great signing. You hate to be picking second in the waiver wire because it means you're not playing very well, but if it is, you take advantage of it. But the rest of the defensive line still needs to pick up and play better because just adding one guy is not – I mean, it'll help.
And it's a move that they haven't done this kind of thing very often, to pick up a veteran late in the season – in the last couple of years, a big name guy like this.
It's not very often that it comes up. But, I mean, to me, the real change is the signing of Antoine Molden. You know, in the last couple of years when this team was out of it, they would tweak their roster, and there was a lot of roster changes this week. Their roster would get tweaked, and Gene would be plucking guys off of this team's practice squad and that team's practice squad, and then he'd be putting guys on IR, which he's done a little bit of that this week, which is what you always want to do. You want to try to cherry pick some of the guys off of an opponent's practice squad that has a lot of talent at one position. But by him going out and adding the wide receiver, fourth year, and then also adding Antoine Molden,
who was a cornerback that the Texans took out of Eastern
Veteran
Kentucky.
Guy. Yeah, that's a little departure than in years past, and I think that's kind of what you're referring to.
Yeah, it's they're picking up veterans who, you know, may or may not be able to contribute, but they're giving them a shot. And, you know, in Jaguars history, the guy I always think of that they did that with was Ben Coleman in Tom's first year. You know, it can happen.
What about Clyde Simmons as well? He got cut late, and we were early on the waiver wire. We picked him up, and He was
preseason, so I guess that's still.
But he was still. I think the way. I don't know how it works in the preseason.
I think that may. Yeah.
But whatever they did, they picked him up.
I just vividly remember Benny because a guy who had fallen out of favor in Arizona and came in and had. Definitely helped you guys for 4 or 5 years.
Very good player. Very good guard.
You know, sometimes it's okay to take a shot.
We were all on our way over here. John, you went to the news conference and talked to Mike Mularkey. His thoughts?
Well, it was just a couple of the writers talked to him very briefly, but it was he can help. You know, he said clearly we need help in the pass rush. They're bringing him in as a guy. The last five games, how he plays will help determine if he can help long term. He sort of said the things you would expect him to say, but he said clearly we need help in the pass rush, and he thinks Jason Babin's a guy with enough left to help.
I think I saw a tweet from you that he's expected to play on Sunday, so logs.
Heck yeah, he's going to play.
Yeah, asked
why
him.
Why wouldn't he? You're not paying him over $1 million for 5 weeks to just say, hey, I'll be ready next week.
And Mike laughed, and he goes, I know he'll play.
Plus, yes. He's a defensive end. They're not the smartest guys.
It's not rocket science, not I can tell you that.
Put your hand in the ground. We're going to run, you know, on sub-protection, defense. Go up the field and hit the quarterback.
I think Mike was excited about it because it's a guy who's a veteran guy. They haven't affected the quarterback. And it's really a no-brainer that hasn't happened a lot around here like that. But this is the move they made. And,
yeah, but I mean, when's the last time an 18-sack guy the year before was waived at this point in the season in league history?
You know, and now you're really having to search deep.
Yeah, and then when that happened, I said, uh-oh, what did he do wrong in Philly?
Well, he obviously had to be a personality thing because, I mean, he's not a guy who has any trouble off the field. I mean, the only thing you can figure is something in the locker room or he made – Well, Andy or somebody, Andy Reid or somebody mad up there that just said it.
Well, I talked to Gene earlier in the day, and he went through their roster with me, you know, in a preliminary, you know, should they be awarded. And, you know, he went through the list of names that they've got on that roster. They have Trent Cole, who's going to make $11 million. You know, I mean, you can't have too many of those guys on the roster.
And Trent Cole has 1.5 sacks, and Babin has 5.5.
And you've got a first-round pick, well, age difference, obviously, and you got a first-round pick from Michigan sitting on there, and you know, it was a roster move as much as anything else, according to him.
I don't believe it.
You think there's a personality?
Yeah, there's a personality conflict with Andy Reid or whoever. But he's not a bad guy.
Well, Philly's also in a position where you got to blame somebody, right?
Yeah, and the deal is
you need the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah. If somebody's a bad guy, that would get out. But, you know, there are bad guys in the locker room and outside the locker room, and there are guys that are
different.
You know, they're a little different. And I'm okay with different, and I have heard that Jason Babin is different, and different is okay as long as you play well.
Well, you showed up with a mohawk once, didn't you?
No.
Ponytail.
Never.
Ponytail. That's right, ponytail.
You showed up with a ponytail.
I showed up with a ponytail. Yeah.
It was very weak.
It was weak.
Jeff had the ponytail, party in the back, business in the front. He was, you know, good old mullet. the mullet going.
It's worth noting, I don't think you came to Jacksonville with a ponytail, did you, Lox? It's gone by then?
No. I'd already lost my hair by then. I lost it in a bet.
All right. Send it to you. Different. Joe?
Thanks, guys. Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller Swiss Watch is available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, the Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. We are here till 10 o'clock. Love to see you. Come on by. We continue on Jaguars Radio. Well, fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. Rolls on, Brian.
All right, welcome back. We are live at Latitude 30 across from the Avenue Mall. This is the official away game headquarters for the Jaguars. So come out on a Sunday afternoon when the Jaguars are in Buffalo and enjoy an afternoon with the cheerleaders and the roar of the Jaguars. By the way, 2.5 inches of snow forecast for Buffalo tonight.
Yeah, but the good thing is that it's actually supposed to warm up towards what, mid to high 40s on Sunday.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about.
In rain. As a player, I'd rather have the snow.
Why?
Not as cold.
It's not as cold because, you know, rain is, you're wet, and then in the 40 degrees range, you know, with wet, no, that's not
miserable.
Cool.
Yeah, they're talking rain and drizzle, high of 55 on Sunday. So the snow obviously will pay. It's going to get back up into the 40s by Saturday, so it should go away. But
you know, the good thing
is that time of year.
The good thing is that forecast where it says rain and 55 could change the lake effect snow in about 5 minutes, and it could be
a blizzard. It could, but if it's going to be 55, that won't change.
Yeah, weather shouldn't be too much of a factor.
Jason Babin by the lake. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it does get, you know, there was a little bit of a lift anyway from breaking the losing streak. And now you've got people with a little bit of energy because you've brought in a name player. Doesn't matter how old he is.
Good player.
How many teams he's been with.
I'm just glad we won so that the 95 team can still hold on to a share of that losing streak record.
You got it.
We got to have something.
And you know it, right? What, Logs, now that Babin's here, you guys will still own the lowest sack number ever, too, most likely. From
you think? What was that? What was it?
You had 17.
Year? Was it 17 for the
year?
Yeah,
I think we'll get four.
No. They broke that. 2009, it was 14.
Yeah.
They broke that record.
Sorry.
Yep.
This team will get 14.
I was proud not to have that record anymore.
It better get more than 14.
If we had an offense in 95, Tony, maybe we would have had more than what we had.
Yeah, an offense. Mark Grant.
We were dynamic.
Yeah, we were. He didn't score any points to allow us to rush the passer.
Run, Mark, run.
Yeah, you guys, we didn't have the lead much.
No. Not at all.
If we won, it was like in the last series of the game.
A lot of come-from-behind victories that year. Well, not a lot.
I just knew there wasn't going to be a lot of sacks in 95. And people are like, hey, how come you guys just, you know, you're not getting many sacks? And I said, I'm just kind of going, and it was guys like John. John asked the question, too, back in 95.
Because they started running their four-minute offense in the third quarter.
And I'd tell John and Pete, you see those guys over there on that side of the locker room? Yeah, yeah, yeah. 71 and 8 and 7 and 33 and 66.
Logs was one
of those, go talk to them.
Logs was one of those problem guys in the locker room, pointing fingers at everyone else.
He was a big deflection guy.
Yeah. I mean, we took the responsibility. Logs?
Log would go, hey, off the record, it ain't us. I'm just telling you, John.
I never gave you anything off the record, I can tell you that. Prisco I did, but not you.
I gave a few things.
I gave Prisco a couple things. And we ain't going to go there.
We digress.
Yeah, I was trying to think of whether any of them were appropriate for air.
No.
Yeah, probably not. So you looked at the Bills and the Bills' offense and Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Streaky.
Yeah, I watched him. I watched him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, real streaky. Fitzpatrick, you know, that their offense has a really dynamic running back in C.J. Spiller. They have a wide receiver who's not as good as he thinks.
Stevie Johnson.
And Stevie Johnson. The other wide receivers are just kind of guys. And the
Chandler's a good tight end.
He's all right.
Pretty good.
He's not a – he's nobody that would be in the top half of the tight ends in the league. He's a solid player. But, you know, that's – I mean, C.J. Spiller is the dynamic aspect, and Stevie Johnson is – Cecil Shorts is better than Stevie Johnson. Way better than Stevie Johnson. Right
Stevie
now.
Got paid last year, too.
That's fine. But he's better than Stevie Johnson this year.
Here we go.
The quarterback, he's going to argue that. No, and he'll have time to argue that in a minute. But the quarterback is very streaky. In the last couple games, because I watched two games of Fitzpatrick, he has not been very good. Not been very good at all. Their defense has gotten better in the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Good front.
Yeah, and their front is Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius, very good. Mario Williams playing harder now. I think they have an elite free safety in Jairus Byrd.
4 interceptions.
The corners, I mean, they're kind of okay.
But, player.
I mean, but as a corner, he's kind of okay. As a returner, he's the best in the league, you know, so – it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. You know, they're calling for Chan Gailey's head up in Buffalo. And then they're being, I mean, right out front about it. I mean, radio shows, newspaper. I mean, they are right out front saying there's been no progress. They're wasting time with Chan Gailey. The writers up there have sharpened the axes.
When you're in your third year and you're 4-7, that's how it works.
I read the transcript of a BuffaloBills.com interview with Chan Gailey, and the questions were very pointed.
I think that I saw that same thing. I think that was a transcript of the press conference.
Okay.
From from the way it worded.
They just posted it on BuffaloBills.com.
Yeah, I don't think that was a.
It was really pointed.
Yeah, that read sort of like that read very much like a press conference. I'm assuming that's what it was.
So is Fred Jackson?
And it was pretty harsh.
Is Fred Jackson being phased out?
They've already said that.
Because Spiller's the guy.
Yeah, Chan Gailey.
Yeah, but he's had some injuries too.
Well, yeah, that's why I asked the question.
Well, he's missed 3 games this year. Last week was his first game back. But Chan Gailey came out and said that CJ's the guy going forward, and that's it. And that's not going to change, nor should it. I mean, CJ's averaging
6.7
a carry, best in the league. He's getting the ball a lot of different ways.
Great in the screen game.
He's a great player, period.
Yeah, Posluszny said today in the locker room, they'll see more screens, twice as many screens against this team than they have all year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's,
and that they're very good at it.
And they also do things that, and I expect to see more of it this week. Now that they have Fred Jackson back, you're going to have a Fred Jackson and a C.J. Spiller on the field at the same time. And then they can, you know, let C.J. Leave the backfield and then get a matchup on a safety or a matchup on a linebacker. And I don't care who's covering C.J. Spiller, it's a mismatch. He's that good of a player. And he's fast. I mean, he is super fast. So,
and that's the matchup I worry about is C.J. Spiller against whoever's covering him. And then the other matchup I think we got to play better up front as an offensive line because their front four is pretty good. Kyle Williams is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is really good.
You guys both watch the tape.
The other one's better.
Darius?
Yes.
Darius, yeah.
I don't know, man. Kyle Williams, he just
and that's hard to say.
He's in the backfield you know constantly. That. He's a powerful guy. He's very good on the bull rush in the pass game. And then Mario Williams is playing better. Mario Williams is getting on the edge. He is getting
he's
a lot
still
of,
so soft, though. I mean, it drives you nuts. The guy's 6'6", 6'5", 292. He won't put his shoulder in hard on anything.
Yeah, but that, you're talking more run game stuff. But if you get him when he can rush the passer.
He can bring it.
He brings it.
All right, well,
that,
look.
That's what that we'll,
– we got to break okay, the news.
We'll talk about
protection and how the Jaguars improved from 7 sacks last Sunday against the Titans. Joe, send us the news.
You got it, Brian. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealers today. Proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, continues on Jaguars Radio. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, know more, get better. Want to know more, get better about the Jaguars? Well, here's Brian Sexton.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot. Live from Latitude 30, this is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli. The Metro PCS call-in line, as it's been for 15-plus years, 800-355-6351. That's 355-6351. NFL 1 news of the day. Jaguars awarded Jason Babin, the 2-time Pro Bowl pass rushing defensive end, who was released in a surprise move yesterday by the Philadelphia Eagles. And Mike Mularkey, and these guys second to that, says he will play Sunday in Buffalo.
Question for John here. Sorry about that, Brian. Did Mike say that he talked to Jason, or did
no? He
Gene
said
Smith?
That he had been around Jason. When Jason worked out for Atlanta before he signed with Tennessee, so that would have been before the what? The
2010.
The Falcons worked him out, and he signed with Tennessee. This is when Jason was, you know, trying to catch on with the team. He was not a high-profile free agent at the time. And he said he was around him a little bit then, liked him, said he didn't anticipate a problem with getting along with him, because there were reports in the Philadelphia papers, I guess sort of hints that he was hard to get along with. And he was asked about that, and Mike said he did not anticipate that being a problem, but I don't think he had talked to him today. Him and Mel had talked about Jason, and Mel and Joe Cullen had looked at film and thought he'd be a good fit to bring him in, and Mike said, get to work and figure out a way to get him in there. So that's kind of
well, if he's going to play Sunday, I imagine there's a plane with him on it right now heading this way.
Yeah, and it's basically, you know, there's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Go get him.
Yeah, right. Hand on the ground. So let's talk a little bit about the Jaguars defending the pass rush with Mario Williams and Kyle Williams and Marcell Dareus. 7 sacks last week. You know, you guys both watched the tape. Thoughts on who, what, where, why, and how you fix it?
Well, the sacks, the 7 sacks were not just the offensive line. Some were offensive line, some were back, some were looked like miss IDs as far as blitz
Mercedes
pickups.
Lewis once or twice,
yeah,
right?
Guys coming free. Mercedes slid.
Mercedes had one.
Mercedes slid to the right. Guy came free off the corner. My guess is miss ID of the protection. So
quarterback.
Quarterback, you know, not
wide receiver.
Wide receiver not running the hot route on a free. So the 7 sacks were a combination of the entire offense. But going into this week, you know, one of the things that is watching the tape is – Cameron Bradfield, he has to play better. It looks like from when he started the season, he's regressing, not playing as well. And he's going to be matched up with Mario Williams, and they're going to have to help him because
– I don't want to say – I don't want people to think he's regressed all year. He's regressed
last few weeks.
In the last 2 weeks. He has taken a step down.
Just from where he started is my point. We are from the start to now. And he's going to have to they're going to have to help him with Mario Williams. Mario Williams is a good pass rusher. I know the numbers aren't there.
If Cameron plays like he did last week against Morgan, Derek Morgan, who was a first round pick for out of Georgia Tech for Titans a couple years ago. If he plays like that against Mario Williams,
who's just a guy,
Mario Williams will kill him.
How many it would be ugly.
Well, Morgan's a guy who's been picked, and he's been hurt and still coming back, so he's not at a high level.
No, he won't kill Bradfield. He'll kill Chad Henne.
Yes.
Which is not what you want.
Which is worse.
And so they're going to have to help him. But inside, it's not going to be any easier because Marcell Dareus and Kyle Williams are two guys that are big, physical, very good against the run and can rush the passer. And they're going to push the pocket. And they're going to – I mean, Uche and Brad and Brewster are going to have to be firm.
And it's amazing that the Buffalo Bills are ranked where they are defensively.
With that front.
And so I went back and watched one of the films earlier on. And you could tell that the linebacking core was not playing well. Mario Williams wasn't playing well.
He had the wrist.
The right end.
Moore.
Was not playing all that well. I mean,
Mark Anderson?
Yes, Mark Anderson was kind of beat up. He didn't play very long now at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, he's missed six games with the knee.
So,
and he's still not healthy, is he?
No, he's not. You know what's interesting is you were talking about these two studs inside and how good they are. But you know, Chris Johnson ran for 195 against him. But beyond that, they gave up 247 to New England, and then the next week, 311 to San Francisco. So what's changed on their defense for them the last couple of weeks? Because, you know, the Colts only had 87. The Dolphins ran for 60. I mean, where were they early?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I watched the Dolphins tape, and they were dominating.
Dominating.
I mean, you know, I don't know what was – I didn't watch those early tapes.
Okay.
So I have no idea.
Well, Johnson ran for 195 like 6 weeks
ago. Yeah, I didn't watch any of that. Watching against the Miami Dolphins.
That was a great film to watch because that's a great matchup. We're talking Marcel Darius and then also Kyle Williams against Incognito.
Yep.
And then also what I think is one of, if not the best center in football, Mike Pouncey.
And they gave him all they wanted.
Gave him all they could handle.
Yeah, and –
the Buffalo guys,
yeah,
Gabe Pouncey and Incognito, all they can handle.
And so, and then, you know, so listen, what the game plan is, not sure, but you would hope this is the game where you say, okay, Eugene, listen, you are going to be by yourself the entire day.
As he should be.
Whoever they put over there, because
Sean Merriman and Kyle Moore, the top two guys.
Merriman is done.
Roll out whoever you want. The message to Eugene is
done.
We need you to block those individuals by yourself. We're going to slide and help.
Well, overall, I mean, let's be clear. The Jaguars' offensive line had not played as poorly as a seven-sack line last year.
Well, they played pretty well against Houston, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, that was not – A, it wasn't all on the line.
No.
And B, they have not played atrociously leading up to that. So
– No, I'm just talking –
You would think they should be able to handle Buffalo, you know.
But there's some matchup issues that concern me watching the last few games and how Cameron Bradfield's played. Listen, Jeff and I were both on the same page of thinking this is a guy who you can build with at right tackle and continue to get better.
Still believe in him.
And I still believe that. I think he has the potential, but the way he has been playing is a little concerning.
Playing like a young player.
And it's the level of play is not there, and so you go against a guy like Mario Williams who will make you look really bad and make it a very long day if you don't play well and play hard. And so you're going to have to help him. You're going to have to leave Mercedes in. You're going to have to run backs at him and chip him. Because I don't think, based on what we've seen the last few weeks, that you can count on Cameron Bradfield locking down Mario Williams.
No way.
And as you guys said, Eugene Monroe is supposed to be able to go solo this
week. And we've said it a couple times. If you're going to be the elite left tackle that we're going to count on, which Eugene Monroe can and should be with his talent, is games like this. Really, games every week, you have to go in and say, listen, you are going to give it – we have you here because you're going to give us the luxury of game planning the other side because we have confidence that you can take care of whoever is over here. And, yes, if, you know, maybe a couple times a game we'll run backs by you and chip on the way out just to take an edge off the rush, which doesn't change your game plan because they can run by on the way out. But as far as game planning, we're going to game plan the other side because we have confidence.
They need to have Rashad Jennings and Will Tafoa. I want to make
Tafoa.
Sure.
Tafoa.
Whoa, back up. You've been doing games now for.
He doesn't say his name. I do.
11.
It's
weeks,
Tafoa.
And you have not.
He says oh, and I say ah at the end.
Still don't know his name.
We just say Fo.
Tafoa. Right. We call him Fo.
We call him Fo.
There was Fo. Now there's Fo.
We just call him Fo on the radio.
Listen, I do the same thing.
Yeah, if there's a name, Fu Matu Ma Fala.
If there's a name,
we call
like,
him Fu.
I just go by it.
I just mumble.
So we had Fu. Now we got Fo.
Fu and Fo.
But anyway, Fo and Rashad need to live up in the ribcage of Mario Williams.
Little chip on the way out.
No, I mean live in the ribs. They don't have to chip. They can just hammer them and hammer them and hammer them again. I mean, just keep on hitting them. I mean, that's. I've said this for a long time about Mario Williams. Mario Williams is not a tough guy. Never has been. Never. If you get to him early and chip him early on, he will take it down a couple notches in a big way.
He'll say enough. But here's the other side of it. If he gets going early, watch out.
And he had three sacks last week. And he has three games this year with at least a sack and a half. So he's had some moments this year where he's got things cranking along.
But you know, like I said, he's not that tough guy. I mean, there are some guys in the league you can chip them and chip them and chip them and chip them, and it never matters. Never matters. And then there are some guys you chip them one time and their head gets on a swivel.
They start looking.
They look. And then even – and the running back at that point doesn't even have to even approach him. He just has to go, boom.
Just run by.
And then some of those defensive ends go, ugh. And then that messes up their rush because, you know, pass rush is about rhythm and routine and steps and angles. And once they get out of sync, that's it.
I'll never forget watching the tape after the Jags-Bucks game back in 2004 and Fred chipping on Simeon Rice. Do you remember that?
Shut it down.
Oh, shut it down.
I showed you that tape.
Oh, you
shut it down.
I was astonished.
I showed you that the week before when I said this is what they need to do to Simeon, because that's how they pronounce it, Simeon Rice. And because once you do that to him early in the game, and I think Mario Williams is not as bad because that's the worst I've ever seen, but I think in a lot of ways it's similar. You know, he's a guy that's had an injured wrist. You get around his legs anywhere, and then he's done. He will shut it down, and I won't say shut it down. He'll take it down a couple notches, and he won't be as difficult as he was against Miami to block in the game coming up.
All right, Joe, let's shut this segment down. And come back and wrap up hour number one. What do you say?
Can do. Try Sonny's Chicken and Ribs, only $10.99. You get a heaping helping of our barbecue chicken and sweet and smoky ribs, plus two of your favorite sidekicks and garlic bread or cornbread, all for only $10.99. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on live at Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Well, you could be driving a brand new Kia Optima by registering to win Cons Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win.
All right, Joe, thanks so much. The Metro PCS call-in number, 800-355-NFL1 or simply 355-6351. If you're calling from Callahan, like Eric is. Eric, welcome to the show.
Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Excellent.
It's a pleasure, Jeff, Tony. Love you guys. And wish we could still have you around. Guys of your stature are hard to come across.
Thank you very much.
Bicelli agrees with you, by the way.
You're 100% on the mark.
By the way, Tony, I love your St. Vincent's commercial about your hip replacement surgery. Did you really eat chocolate pudding at 3 o'clock in the morning?
I did.
Oh, sure. He's been hitting here giving him grief, dropping all these little hints about it.
And not just that night.
And I haven't seen the commercial, and I'm like, do they have chocolate pudding here at Latitude 30?
I saw it, and the first thing I thought of was that it wasn't just one chocolate pudding, I'm sure.
No.
Well, the scene is this little cup of chocolate pudding.
When you're sitting up in a drug-induced haze after, you know, having hip surgery at 3 in the morning, not much on TV. I got hungry.
But she didn't just bring you one.
I said, can I get some chocolate pudding?
All right,
I would like to talk about Chad Henne.
You got it. Let's get off of pudding.
Okay.
Let's make it Tony hungry.
Don't get me wrong. Blaine Gabbert, nice guy, but he's not cutting it. First year, rookie year, okay, benefit of the doubt. He gets drafted, goes right into a lockout. Okay, so we gave him a mulligan. This year, he's not cutting it. So Chad Henne takes over. 2 weeks ago, gets his first start against the Texans. Now, granted, even though we lost in overtime, as far as I'm concerned, he had a red-letter day. 354 yards, 4 touchdowns, if I remember correctly, passer rating around 120. Okay, now, last week against Tennessee, once again, awesome day, passer rating around 120. So here's my last comment. If Chet had been...
All right, when you got to the good stuff, we lost.
Hold on.
You
had to say it again. We lost it.
You say it again. You said, and here's my comment. Go ahead. You can't.
You're gone. It was a great call up to that point.
All right, Eric.
I have no idea what your point was either.
Give us a
He's got a call back.
Yep, call us back. Hey, I just got a tweet, by the way, at John Osher, at Tony Bacelli. I just got one that says, hey, tell Logs, Mike Lombardi mentioned him on NFL Network as the last time the Jags had a pass rush.
He's kissing up to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about
yeah.
I think Tony Brackens was pretty good at rushing the passer.
Now, to go back to the Chad Henne thing and his comments about Blaine Gabbert, hey, look, let's not get ahead of the story here on both guys. Blaine Gabbert, I don't think, is anywhere near done. His future is still ahead of him. He's just a young player. And I've heard people say, oh, you're just making excuses for him. No, I'm not. You know, I'm not making excuses for Blaine Gabbert. What he came into last year was an absolute, and I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, was an absolute train wreck. And I got even more stories about last year from talking to a couple of the guys on the roster earlier this week. It was unbelievable, and it wasn't Blaine, I can tell you that. And so he got no benefit out of what his play experience was last year. And so we'll see what the future holds for Blaine Gabbert. But I agree that Chad Henne has performed very well in his place and has been outstanding the last 2 weeks. Now, for those people that are saying Chad Henne's the guy going forward.
Just like we said with Blaine.
We'll see.
Let's give it time. 5 games left in the season. If he plays as well as he's played the first 2 games.
Then there's no doubt.
Then he has every right to go into next year as the starter, and it's going to be hard for Blaine to do anything before next regular season to change that.
Yes.
But, you know, 3 weeks ago, there were people who wanted Chad Henne cut. So, I mean, Chad would be the first to tell you, I've got to do it for the next 4 or 5 games. If he does, he's played except. I mean, if he plays as well for the next 4 or 5 games as he has the first 2, he's playing very, very, very well. And
well, he's the third highest-rated quarterback last 2 weeks. And what he did last week was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, he got sacked a bunch of times, and I showed this on Jaguars All Access on Monday night. Linda.
Cha-ching.
God, it's a little slow there, Linda. Thank you.
That's the fortunate sense of humor.
And I showed it because, you know, after the 6th sack of the night, he had 2 plays on the next drive that were really impressive. One, he had an unblocked defender, and he stood right there, and he delivered the ball, and he just got absolutely hammered after he threw the completion to Cecil Shorts. And then another one, he had a blitz on a 3rd and 9, and you would think that he would get nervous in the pocket on a 3rd and 9 with the blitz coming, and it was very apparent that the blitz was coming, and he didn't. He stayed in the pocket. He was patient, and he waited and allowed the route to develop. And then another point in the game, he had nice pocket presence where he just kind of slid around in the pocket and then made a completion.
I mean, and as many strides really as Blaine impressive. Has made, he was not doing those things.
He wasn't
at that
doing
level.
Those, and that was very impressive by Chad Henne. And I give him credit because it allowed the team to get its first home win of the year.
And I thought what was impressive. I'm sorry. Particularly impressive about Chad. Interception, first play of the game.
Yep.
3 sacks on the second series. You know, this team has not overcome adversity very well this year. They overcame adversity very well on Sunday, and he was a big reason why.
Should we try and squeeze Alec in Argyle in before the top of the hour, Joe? Let's do it. Alec, if you're in Argyle, you're up next.
Thanks for taking me real quick, guys. My question has to do with Tennessee's touchdown. I sit in the end zone, and it looked like the play clock expired to me. And I know all scoring plays are reviewed, so I kind of have a 2-part question. One, do they review the play clock to make sure the play clock hasn't expired? And I'm assuming since all scoring plays are reviewed, even if we thought it was expired, we couldn't challenge it. They'd get the unsportsmanlike on that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, you're right. That's supposed to be reviewable. And they might... If what you're saying is true, which I had not seen, they must have missed it.
The clock was right to the wire.
Right.
I remember the play.
How are the referees taught? Do they watch the ball and then look up the clock, or do they watch the clock and look down at the ball? How does that work?
I don't know the actual mechanics of it, but I know that there's one guy whose sole job it is to identify and relate to the play clock before his eyes go to the play. And I'm not sure which guy it actually is. That's his job, pre-snap.
Okay, I'm just curious, since I sit in the end zone and I was looking at it, I could have sworn it was expired, but I knew they review them, and I wasn't sure if that was part of the review or not.
Well, they're going to – a lot of times they will give you the little bit of leeway. You know, if the ball snapped right after it hits
zero,
they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Alec, thanks for the call from Argyle. Be safe. All right, we have one more hour of Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna. We are live at Latitude 30, Jacksonville's hotspot. Come on down and see us this evening or Sunday when the Jaguars are on the road, because this is the official away game headquarters of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News is next. Welcome back. Jaguars this week, hour number 2 now, live from Latitude 30. Ryan Sexton along with John Osher, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Buscelli. Of course, the Metro PCS call-in lines are open. 800-355-NFL1 or simply 355-6351. Linda Fortunato is back at Jaguar Central. She'll take your call, pass it along to Joe, who passes it along to us. That's how the whole system works. Jaguars at Bills Sunday afternoon. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff, by the way. We'll start things for those of you here in Jacksonville with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show at 10. Jaguars pregame at noon. Kickoff at 1. Winn-Dixie postgame show. Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show to follow. Tony?
Listen, let's clean up a couple things around the Jason Babin free agent or off the waiver wire.
The acquisition, right.
The acquisition. There was only two other teams that made claims for him. We had thought it was eight.
It was reported early that it was eight.
It was three, the Buffalo Bills and the Washington Redskins. Obviously, we had priority. And then the other thing is, even though Jason Babin has this year plus three more on his contract, it can be he can.
There's a quirk.
There's a quirk in the CBA that he has the ability to void his last two because he was a vested veteran who was claimed off waiver wire. So we have the Jaguars have this year and next year, and then it's Jason Babin's prerogative at that time to either waive the last 2 years and become a free agent, or he can stay and play.
Right. It basically protects both sides.
Absolutely.
Jaguars get him for a certain period of time, but they don't lock him up forever.
That's right.
And his number's palatable. It's less than $5 million next year,
well,
right?
And here's the thing. I mean, hopefully Jason can do it for you know 3 or 4 more years, but a year and a half from now, he'll be going on. He'll be a 34-year-old defensive end.
And you're just wanting help now and hopefully next year.
Yeah, I mean, don't worry about 2013. Right. Let's just worry about –
it's a long way away. 14.
I think about the end of 2013.
That's probably been – I mean, if I had any criticism of Gene Smith, that would be, I think, sometimes that he has a tendency to want to keep looking forward and building with a lot of younger guys. And sometimes you got to take it now. And I give him credit this year because, you know, the Antoine Molden, want to make sure we pronounce that right, not say people think Anquan Bolden, but Antoine Molden and Jason Babin here. I mean, that's what you got to do. You know, you're not always going to get better by keeping young guys and hoping to develop them and expecting them to develop. You know, the rule of thumb is that, look, you keep young guys, and then if they've earned the right and beat out a veteran guy, then you keep them. You don't keep them just because they're young and you think that they can develop. Make them prove it.
Is there any risk to this at all?
No.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely
it didn't seem like
nothing.
It seemed like this made way too much sense, and there was no drawback whatsoever, which is why I asked the question. Is there something out there that
And it made perfect sense, you know, and I told you guys earlier, last night when the news broke that Jason Babin was released, waived, whatever you want to call it, I already wrote his information on my game board that we use for the game day broadcast. And I wrote it in green because I wrote it in green just to signify that there's no risk, money, monetarily, whatsoever.
You're
2-9
and you have 13 sacks. There's no risk.
Okay, so in reading this.
Is that a problem?
Well, that's a problem, yeah. Having only 13 sacks is a problem.
Well, there's no pass rush. I mean, Mike Mularkey said on Monday at his news conference, and he said it on his radio show on Monday evening, that there was a pass rush, that there was the effort to move Locker and to affect him. It just, I got to be honest, it didn't feel that way calling the game.
Go ahead, Tony.
I'm not going to say anything. I guess I didn't see it that way? I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I didn't see that either.
I mean.
Neither did I.
I'm
which
okay.
Is why I was surprised.
I'm okay with Coach Mularkey saying opinion. That. He's the head coach. He's trying to, you know.
Protect his guys.
He's trying to
bit.
Protect his guys. I appreciate that. And head coach, that's his job. But as someone who, you know.
Well, the reason I bring it up is I don't remember a game where it was where you had the opposing quarterback basically standing flat-footed.
Well, I mean, there was a
the week before with Matt Schaub.
There was a.
You're right. You're right.
There was a couple plays to where they did
that.
To where they did move Jake Locker, but it was very, very few times. And if you're the Tennessee Titans, you're not real happy about Jake Locker's numbers, considering he had a very clean pocket all day.
And he wasn't very good.
I mean, he was not good at all.
And they couldn't get open either.
So they fired Chris Palmer on Monday.
Right. No, I mean, now what worried you as a Jaguars follower at the end of that game, all of a sudden it looked just like the week before where they got the ball back and you thought they were going to drive. And credit Russ Allen for making a big play.
Well, thought they did.
Well, no.
They did the first drive.
Right.
They just didn't make the second drive because.
In the week before, they had done it twice. and it looked like that was the scenario again. And, you know, this week they made the play to prevent it, but it looked bad.
All right, so I know there's a lot of people who are going and Googling Jason Babin and getting the stories that were in this morning's Philadelphia Inquirer and the New Jersey newspaper. And one of the things they're going to read is wide nine, and Jim Washburn's wide nine, which is what helped Babin get 10 or 12 and a half sacks in 2010 with Tennessee, and then 18 sacks last year with Philadelphia. So what's the wide nine, if you can put it in layman's terms for our audience? And will Mel Tucker use some version of it if this is what Babin does so well?
Well, a wide nine is when the defensive end lines up outside the tight end, and he's not really on the outside shoulder.
He's in a ghost position.
He's another half a step wider, and his first inclination on the snap of the ball is 100 miles an hour.
Up the field.
Attacking the outside edge of the tight end and go rush the quarterback and then react and play run after that. And the Jaguars don't play a lot of wide nine unless they're in a sub type situation, but they do play an occasional nine, which is outside shoulder of the tight end and maybe a quarter step out and then attacking that tight end. So it's not something that's going to be completely foreign to Mel Tucker, is to have a guy that you know you would like to put him in a comfort zone, which is a nine or a wide nine. They do some of that already.
And listen, the bottom line is where you're really hoping you get production out of Jason Babin is on third down and sub. And when you're in third down, listen, a lot of times you're not going to have a tight end to that side anyway, so he's lined up in a wide position, in a ghost position, rushing against the offensive tackle. And all the time, including the Jaguars, even in third down, as Jeff just said, the defensive end will line up outside of the tight end so he can get a clean path and try to rush the offensive tackle. So I don't think it's, you know, I think it's probably much to do with about nothing. First and second down, Philadelphia was one of the few teams that ran a lot of wide nine. It can give you some problems in the run. I think it creates some natural void.
It does. It's not a good run defense.
I don't think it's sound, but that's neither here nor there. I don't think it's a big deal, I guess is the point. When you're asking him to rush the passer on passing downs, he's going to have the freedom to move around and get in space.
Okay.
Because at first, you would think he probably wouldn't play this weekend a whole lot in run. You would think he'd play more.
No, he's going to play.
All right, well.
He's going to play. Make no mistake about that.
Well, let me divide it up.
He's going to play in regular situations. I mean, playing defensive line, there's a lot of carryover from as long as you're in the same type of defense, which is
4-3
or 3-4. If you're making the trend or making that you know switch of teams, then as long as it's a 3-4 to a 3-4 or a 4-3 to a 4-3, it's a lot of carryover and he can handle it. He will play and know, I don't want to say all of the defense, but he will know the majority of the defense.
Hey, he's making $328,000 a game.
Good for him.
He's playing.
Good for him.
God bless him, but he'll be playing.
he'll be playing. Absolutely. Just in case you're wondering how much he would play, he'll be playing.
That's good money. I'd take it for...
He had 18 sacks
a game.
He earned it.
Yeah, he did earn it. And the Jaguars hope that he can bring a little bit of it here.
Did he get that contract after it, the 18 or
no, before? He got it after the 12 and a half, which is a good number.
And that's another real positive thing, is that you got a guy that you've just gotten on your roster who had 12 and a half sacks, got a big fat contract, and then went out the next year with a new contract.
Got 18.
And got 18.
And a new team, so changed.
Same defensive line coach, though.
But that's
same
good.
Same scheme.
So, I mean, that's a real positive thing, and that it shows you that he's not one of those guys that gets a contract and then just kind of fades away until all of a sudden it's contract
and he
plays hard.
And if you just watch Jason
plays hard every down.
Yeah, you watch Jason Babin play, that's not a concern. I mean, the guy plays with a reckless abandon. I mean, he is a get-after-you-every-snap type of – I was talking – before the game to the offensive line coach of the Carolina Panthers, and we were talking about the Philadelphia's front and what I thought and kind of going back and forth and saying, listen, your right tackle, if he has to have the mentality that you better go play every snap, because if you don't against a guy like Jason Babin, he will beat you and make it a long night. Now, if you match his energy, that goes a long way because he's an energy player. So I'm not concerned about Jason Babin not playing hard. I just don't think that's in his makeup.
All right, let's take a break, Joe. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Jaguars getting a running game started this week and building off what they did last week, but they're going to have to do it without Jalen Parmalee in addition to Maurice Jones-Drew.
Well, pick up your Denny's Playmaker card at participating Denny's locations and learn how you can win a Mega Jaguars fan experience at the December 23rd home game. No purchases necessary. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna rolls on live from Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Well, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. Six Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart, more fashion, less price.
All right, the Metro PCS call-in lines, Joe, as you know so well, 800-355-NFL1 or 355-6351. Sexton Baselli, Loggeman has stepped out for the moment. John Osher is here. Nah, he'll be back. His briefcase is sitting right there. He's got plenty to say. Let's talk a little bit about
We know that.
Yeah, from the man who speaks more than anyone. Oh, we missed you last week, big boy. We missed you.
I miss you guys.
You
although I was eating a very
steakhouse.
Good meal.
Yeah. Where were you? What steakhouse?
Papa Brothers Steakhouse.
Oh, yeah. Papa Brothers is very, very good.
It was outstanding.
Did you go back to the hotel room afterwards?
I did.
Okay.
I did. Well,
there's lots of guys that get lost in Dallas at these great big shiny clubs.
Not me. You know, that's not my style.
No, I know.
That's not my style.
I just pulling it out. Absolutely. Giving you the chance to say it was your style.
It was not my style.
But I'm sure it was some of the traveling crew style.
You know what? What they do is I don't want to know. But I do. But I was in Monday night. I was in Philadelphia. And Joe,
did you do gym steaks?
No, I went after the game. We went to Pat's. And then I walked across. I had one at Pat's.
One at Geno's.
And I walked across the street and had one at Geno's. And it was outstanding.
Who'd you like better?
I think I'm going to go with Geno's. Okay. I think Geno's, but it was so close.
Do you remember the preseason game a couple years ago? We all went to Jim's. And then you and I went back the next day for lunch.
Yeah, it was outstanding.
But which one did you eat first?
I had Pat's first.
And you say the Geno's was better?
I think Geno's was a little, the meat was a little bit better. They were both outstanding. I forget
which is which, but one is chopped and one is sliced.
The Geno's is sliced, and I like Geno's better. Now, Pat's was outstanding. So far in Philly, I've been to Jim's.
Yes.
I went to Tony Luke's a couple of times, and Pat's and Geno's. And I would put Tony Luke's is last. That's easy for me. And then the rest of them are all very good. Now, Tony Luke's was good, don't get me wrong, but not as good as the others.
So how's that diet coming along?
Well, I've been doing good. I was almost down 15, but I gained about three
plateaued
back.
Plateaued a little bit.
I gained about three back this weekend. But listen, if you're in Philly, how do you not go get a cheesesteak?
You got to go.
And then I had one, and I was still hungry.
Go across the street?
It was across the street, and I had to test to let the people of Jacksonville know when they're in Philly, where to go.
Research.
And it was about 12:30 at night, and I figured.
I think you can save that and write it off.
This will be breakfast.
Did you have one at the game?
I did not. I had a soft pretzel at the game. I was waiting afterwards. I was saving for.
I wish we had a camera on Loggeman's face right now.
That one year that we went to Philly, how many years ago was that?
It was two.
How many did we eat?
I had two that night. I think when Bad had two more for lunch.
I know you did at lunch. All right, running game.
It's outstanding. It's good cheesesteak.
Right, when you're done talking about food, let me know.
No, I'm done. We'll go to the running game. I don't think anyone cares about my food.
Well, somewhere someone is thinking, I got to go to Pat's when I'm there next week.
Pat's is good. Geno's is outstanding. Which one do you like better, Joe? You're a Philly guy.
He's a Jim's guy.
Jim, fourth and south, Jim's.
Jim steaks.
Yep.
You don't like Geno's or Pat's, huh?
Oh, yeah, I'll eat them. But if I got my choice, I'll go to Jim's.
I think I do remember Jim's being my favorite, too, from a couple years ago.
Did we go there?
Remember that time we walked all the way down by the Liberty Bell, the Constitution Hall?
Yeah.
And we just kept going?
They're all good.
Oh, yeah. It's tough to beat it. All right, so we ready now?
Yes, sorry.
Okay, running game. Jags break the 100-yard plateau, actually hit it for the first time in 7 weeks. Jalen Parmalee ran hard. We learned this week, you know, he left the game after his first 13-yard carry with a torn groin.
The fact that he came back is amazing. Yeah. I give the guy a lot of credit.
And Logs, you were watching him on the sidelines. I mean, he kept working at it.
I was amazed that he was able to come back because he came back. The first time he came back, he caught a dump-off pass, and he couldn't even plant the left foot into the turf to get up the field. And I said, he's done. I mean, he tried, and he's done. And then they go in at halftime, and all of a sudden they come back after halftime, and he's back out there. I'm like, what is he doing?
And ran hard.
And he ran, had his best run of the game. After that point, I was going, amazing.
Hats off to him.
Modern medicine today. And then you could just tell that later in the game,
he was done.
Yeah, he just couldn't do it. But I give him credit because, you know, and the reason I get so excited about a guy like that is there's a guy that sees an opportunity. You know, knowing that Maurice is down, He's never had more than five carries in a year his entire career. Here's his golden opportunity.
He wasn't going
to
let it pass.
To show people what he's got as a running back. And even though he got hurt, I guarantee you he showed him.
Yeah, and you know, I talked to him today in the locker room, and he said, you know, I just wanted to play. And it was as simple as that. He had a chance. He was there. You know, he didn't say this, but you never know with a, you know, with his career, you never know when you're going to get that chance again.
And
you know, cuz he's not a frontline guy, that, you know,
he's a special teams guy.
And he took advantage of it. And you know, sort of moving on from that.
Well, I was going to go to the flip side of that.
Well,
and talk about, I mean, here's the other running back, Rashad Jennings.
Right, which is about,
is in a contract year, in his fourth year, with an opportunity to get a piece of that NFL salary pie. You know, holy cow.
And this is his chance. I mean,
this is,
he's getting another chance to start. At some point, he's got to take advantage
of it.
I thought he ran better.
He ran better. But still, it's got to be better than that.
Yeah.
I mean, if he would just run like he did in the preseason, which I thought was really, really good, and then all of a sudden he comes out, and then it hasn't been like that. And
well, this is sort of his third opportunity now.
And he's hurt himself now already.
But he's got a chance now to come back, and this is the time. You got to figure this is the time.
Just looking at it, and I know that fans don't want to hear about the money perspective because, I mean, that should motivate players. But if that's what
if
that's what it takes – then here's a little perspective. Let's say he was going to make $100 next year, and if he played really well, and just for scale. And now that he's already gotten demoted one time, now he's got the potential to not even make that $100 anymore. Now he might end up making $65 next year. So I mean, his scale has dropped because he already missed out on that opportunity.
Tony's having trouble with the math.
No, I'm not the one who struggled adding up things last week. That was Mr. Logan, or 2 weeks ago. That was Mr. Logan.
By the way, you were getting.
Did you follow my line of thinking there, though, Tony?
I mean, I got it.
The ceiling is lowered because of the lost opportunity already.
I get your reasoning. I think it's very good. But why shouldn't money motivate players? I don't get that. Why shouldn't it? I think most people who work, they work to go to make a paycheck. And the more money they can make, the more motivated they are.
All
and
that
so
said,
what? I mean, listen.
He's got a chance now.
No, that's
third
my point.
Chance.
I mean, my point is, as a player,
right?
When you're given an opportunity and knowing that if you play well, you're going to be rewarded, not only in your personal pride, which is important for every good player, but the fact that there's a monetary reward, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And he had a golden opportunity at the start of the season. He's got a third one now, and this has to be the chance. I mean, this has to be the time to take advantage of it.
So you're saying you're a capitalist.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty clear.
Yeah, I know. I just couldn't resist it.
But Jeff's point's very good, is the ceiling of what he could have, the bar he could have set by playing well early when he had his first opportunity, when they needed him, when Maurice went down.
Right, that's probably gone now.
That's probably gone. He still has a chance to redeem himself or whatever you want to say, to go out and prove that that was an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
That really, the guy who ran hard in the preseason is that guy.
So
if he comes out, and
but John was right in that this is really his third opportunity, because the first one was the beginning of the season,
right?
And then he got hurt, and so the ceiling drops a little bit there, because mm-hmm. then you start thinking, if you're the man who's writing the check, saying injury prone,
sure,
and then he comes back and
was healthy but didn't play well,
and Maurice is out and he doesn't play well. Well, the ceiling just drops a little bit more from after it did the first time. And so now his ceiling is lower, but he's got that third chance, like
and
you said.
As you guys know more than me, a lot of guys don't get that third chance. I mean, sometimes your first chance is gone, and it's gone. I keep saying this is a time you've got to think he takes advantage of a third chance.
Well, you know, in watching him in the Oakland game, in the Green Bay game, and then this last week, he misses cuts. I mean, he misses what seemed to be wide open areas where he can run to. There was one on Sunday, and Mike Mularkey confirmed it for me on Monday, where he turned it up inside the tackle and the guard, where if he just kept going outside, there was 10 to 12 more yards.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, I had a sit-down with Sylvester Kroom for the Mike Mularkey show. Thank you, Linda.
Nice.
And, he's been coaching running backs a long time. And he said all the great backs have great vision. And I think that Rashad has it at times, but for whatever reason this year, he's not seeing it. he's not seen it. Now, I don't know why, but hopefully for this football team, he will find it.
So who gets the predominance of the carries? Because you're down to three fullbacks, Rashad Jennings and Jordan, make sure I pronounce his name right, Todman, who they signed yesterday.
I think he has to get the first shot.
And then I would think there's a limit to how long that shot lasts.
Were you surprised they didn't bring Toastin back? Only with the injuries? I mean, he's a guy who ran well in the preseason. I'm not saying he's, you know, but instead of bringing a guy in and Todman, who doesn't know the offense. I mean,
he outran Parmalee at times in the preseason.
Well, that's my point. He knows the offense. And with the injury, I was surprised they didn't bring him back.
Well, maybe he's on someone else's roster.
Maybe it is. Yeah, I haven't paid attention. So,
all right, Joe.
All right, Brian. Get a great deal on a Ford F-150 during Truck Month at your local Southern Ford dealers. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on here on Jaguars Radio. Well, the Jaguars Rewards Program is now better than ever. Season ticket owners get all the great premium benefits like Teal Deals and the Gate Guest Redemption Program, but it's now open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, and register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com, click on the Jaguars Rewards logo, and start earning your rewards today.
All right, Joe, thanks so much. Brian Sexton back with John Osher, Jeff Loggam, and Tony Boselli. A final half hour of Jaguars This Week. Live from Latitude 30, the official away game headquarters of the Jaguars. Don't forget Sunday, Jaguars at Ralph Wilson Stadium for a 1 o'clock kickoff. That means they'll get things started early around here with the Roar in Jackson DeVille. So make your way over to Latitude 30. I was thinking the address, but I don't
Phillips
know.
Highway.
Yeah, it's Southside between, Boulevard, right across from the Avenue. You know where it is. I was just trying to give the address.
Yeah, it's Phillips Highway between Southside and 95.
Okay, good. Well, you know how to get here then. So special teams last week, an improvement from Houston, where they gave up a 54-yard kickoff return, a 72-yard punt return. They had four punts inside the 20 and three kickoffs inside the 18-yard line. So the coverage teams were great on kickoff, and obviously the punter did a nice job putting the ball back down. Yeah, they're going to need that this week, big time.
Brian Anger had a 47.0 net and gross. He had an outstanding day.
How's he doing on his record-setting pace,
Logs? He is still on his record-setting pace. If the season were ended today, he would set the NFL rookie record for gross and net, and he would establish new Jaguars records in gross and net.
And even beyond that on Sunday, though, he had two punts that flipped the field in pretty key situations, which is really, you know, I get the conversation and Tony's smiling, but that's what you hope for. If you're going to draft a guy that high, you want game-changing plays.
It's been
plays
a couple
like
weeks since
and
we've
he did
talked
do
about
that
him,
on.
So it's fair.
Are you counting the one the one off the side of his foot at the end of the game where it hit the great roll and
no, that's
shot
not
into,
the one that flipped the field.
No, he had
he had a 66-yarder that flipped the field.
That it went to the 3 and then he had another
62.
That
he had a 66 and I think a 62 or
over
something
60,
like
yeah.
that.
But he had two that drastically changed field position.
Okay, let's go on to the next
one. And the second one was off the penalty.
Well,
it's
important this week.
No, it's good. We won. I mean, I will put up with talking punter talk if we win.
No, field position was key.
Well, it's key this week because Leotis McKelvin averages a very good kick and punt return.
Almost 21 yards per punt return.
No, he blew that. I mean, he was a big reason they beat the Miami Dolphins on Thursday night.
He has a 79 and an 88-yard punt return this year.
Two punt returns, and then Brad Smith, the former Wildcat quarterback with the Jets, has had a kick return for a touchdown this year. So they have three kick return touchdowns for a touchdown. And the other thing is they have two blocked field goals this year. Number 92. You got your board there, right?
I do. Right here. Hold on one second.
Defensive tackle backup, Carrington.
Alex Carrington.
Carrington has two blocked field goals this year, and it's probably the best field goal block effort unit I've watched all year.
Well, and you know, Mike said on his radio show Monday they almost had a punt blocked, and it seemed to me like on extra points and field goals that there was a little bit more pressure coming off of the left side than we have seen all season long. Did you notice that?
Against the Jaguars?
Titans-Jaguars, yeah.
Yeah.
Looked like there was a little bit more pressure.
Maybe a little bit so. But you know the other.
We're into the details of it now, fellas.
But the other thing that I think really was a nice thing to have going into this game against the Buffalo Bills with their dangerous return game is the kickoff coverage unit was just outstanding against the Titans. Josh Scobie, we saw in previous games this year when you needed him to have a touchback, a key kickoff late in the ball game, he had two of them, I believe. correct me if I'm wrong, two of them that went out of bounds. One against Green Bay.
Yes.
And then he had one other one, and I'm trying to remember the game that it happened at. Come on, Ray, man.
I thought it was Houston. It was recently.
Houston had the big
returns. It was the near sideline.
Well, then he had the one against Minnesota that
that's what it was.
He sort of mishit and they were able to return it.
Yeah, Minnesota, he
I think it happened against Oakland, too.
That's, yeah.
There were a couple like that.
Two or three.
That he should have hit it out of the end zone.
Oh, well, you know, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about where the ball went out of bounds. You're talking about key moments where he mishit.
Yes.
I misheard your question. Oh, yeah, Minnesota was the big one.
Yep.
And there was another one later. But
well, the one against Green Bay, he mishit one.
That was the one that went out of bounds.
Okay, that was kind of near sideline.
So there was let's just say it this way. There has been some big moments where we've messed up.
And he was good. He was good at key moments. And the average start for the Tennessee Titans was the 13.2-yard line after kickoff.
Outstanding.
That's outstanding.
It's very good.
So you combine that with Brian Anger, that's what the kind of effort you're going to need this week against Leotis McKelvin and Brad Smith.
Well, and the
good return teams.
The field will be hard. The ball will be wet. In many cases, if the rain comes. And more than that, there's wind at that stadium. You played at that stadium a lot.
Yeah, lost a lot at that stadium.
Well, yeah, that has something to do with Jim Kelly. But yeah. That's got a swirling wind, and if the wind is blowing up there, that affects everything. Special teams will be big.
It will be blowing. The forecast, as we said, is for snow and then rain later in the week, and that usually signifies something coming off the lake. It's going to be windy.
Your good game was up there too, Tony.
Yeah. I was fine with that place.
You're in Vegas.
We had a beautiful day that day, by the way.
It was loud. That's all I remember.
Yeah, that is
all I remember. I couldn't hear anything for
that is
three straight hours.
Back in the heyday,
it was great.
That
was great
place
scene.
Was unbelievable. It was an absolute joy to play in Buffalo when they were on their run.
I think it's only one or two places that I've played in where I could not hear the snap count on first, second, or third down.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. Whether Mark was under center or shotgun, you had to look at the ball the entire time, which is always a challenge when Bruce Smith is lining up out there.
I mean, when we used to go up there and play them, I mean, on offense, they had Lofton, Andre Reed.
Thurman Thomas.
Wait a minute. Now, the other wide receiver, Don Beebe.
Thurman Thomas.
Pete Metzlar is at tight end, who, by the way, is now their tight ends coach, who is probably the best blocking tight end in the league at that point. Will Wolford at left tackle, Jim Richard at guard, Kent Hall at center.
Yeah, they were good.
They had the backup running back,
House
too.
House Ballard
beast,
at right
remember?
Tackle. 30.
Keith Davis, is that the name? Or is that?
Kenneth Davis.
Kenneth Davis.
I just know they had Thurman Thomas and
they were good.
And Jim Kelly.
Really good. And then on defense, I mean, think about the defense.
Phil Hansen.
Phil Hansen, Bruce Smith, Jeff Wright.
Cheryl Collin.
Biscuit.
Daryl Talley.
Cornelius Bennett, Daryl Talley, Shane Conlon, like you said.
They're loaded.
You had Kazoo.
That crazy white
Kelso.
Safety that
you remember,
tried to kill you.
You remember Kazoo?
Mark Kelso.
He hit me
Mark
right,
Kelso?
He hit me one time and almost killed. I mean, he tried to kill
Kelso
me.
Kelso did?
Yeah, I was in a pile and I'm trying to block and he came without stopping and put his helmet under my chin.
The reason we call him Kazoo, and for those that don't know, and maybe a little bit too young,
he
had the helmet.
You're right.
And then he had
extra padding.
He was ahead of his game.
Yep.
He had a padded.
And because he used his head as a weapon.
That went on the outside of the shell of the helmet, and so he looked like Kazoo from the Flintstones.
I don't know if he could play in today's NFL. No. He'd be fined every 5 seconds.
Might be. And then they had the other safety, the strong safety.
They were good.
I'm drawing a blank on it. And then the corners that they had at the time were real good. I mean, that was one heck of a defense.
Well, you go to four Super Bowls in a row, you're –
You would pull, you know, when the team travels and you're on the road, you know, the city of Buffalo is not that far from Orchard Park, maybe a 20-minute drive.
Yeah, that's about it.
And it's never that bad of a drive.
And it's a neighborhood going in.
Yeah, you're going through a neighborhood and all of a sudden you pop out and there's this big stadium. And you always, typically, you would leave the stadium around 8:45, 9 o'clock-ish, most teams. And when you would pull into Orchard Park.
Great tailgaters.
The parking lots were full. The grills were going, the
There's
RVs.
Nothing like the scenes going into New England and Buffalo.
You know what
to go through those towns.
The RVs were all in force.
You know what I remember
amazing.
About Buffalo fan? Is after we beat them in 96 as we were driving off as a gentleman had his 3 or 4 year old son on his shoulders giving us the double bird.
And the kid probably was
the
too.
Kid was right there with him. Like,
there was a few times leaving Orchard Park where we got the as the sun was going down, the moons were coming up.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking moon. I'm talking the moon.
Yeah, full moon. A couple full moons.
And because of the snow effect, the lake effect snow, you are guaranteed to have your buses pelted with snowballs on the way out.
Oh, gosh.
Here's a couple of names from that defense, by the way, we probably forgot. In the defensive backfield, they had Henry Jones, who was a first-round pick, mm-hmm. and they also had Nate Odoms, who was the cornerback.
Cornerback, really
and Kurt
good.
Schultz was that hard-hitting safety that people remember. They had not just Cornelius Bennett and Shane Conlon, but Daryl Talley. And
ugliest man alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Heck of a player.
Steve Christie was their kicker. Chris Moore.
Punter. Yep. They're actually honoring him this weekend.
And then a guy who played there even after this team started to be taken apart, Mike Lotish, was a real load.
Defensive tackle.
Yep. Played most tackle there. And then on the offensive side of the ball.
Went to Denver.
Mm-hmm. You got it right. Kenneth Davis. I'm trying to remember if there's anyone else. No, we pretty much covered
They had a fullback, Gardner.
Are you going over the whole roster?
Carwell Gardner.
Carwell Gardner was Carwell pretty Gardner. Good.
Want to go over their assistant coaches now?
Yeah, let's see if there's anybody who's still coaching in the NFL.
But Jim Richer was I remember Jim Richer. He was, I think they retired his number or something, was a really good guard for a long time for the Buffalo Bills. And you could always tell Jim Richer because after the play was over, he would take his helmet off, and he actually had a strap that went from his shoulder pad to the back of his helmet because he was a head ducker. And so in order to not duck his head anymore, he actually put a screw in his shoulder pads with a strap, and then it attached to his helmet so that wouldn't allow him to drop his head. It kept his head up and back. So,
which I'm pretty sure they don't allow anymore because it actually makes it more dangerous to break your neck.
Exactly. So when he was done on the field, he would walk off the sideline and flip his helmet off, and it would just flop over onto the back of his shoulder pad.
Let's end this segment by telling Buscelli that their special teams coordinator today is the special teams coordinator from those teams, Bruce DeHaven.
Great news.
One of the best.
Great.
There's two special teams coaches that have been around the league for a very long time. Bruce DeHaven is simply one of the best, and the other one's probably Bobby April.
Okay.
Don't forget Westhoff of the Jets. He's been around for about a million
years. He's been around forever, but I don't like him.
Okay, but he's pretty good.
Leave him off the list.
Well, then let's not mention it.
Yeah, no, forget it. Bobby April was a defensive back coach at USC when I was a freshman.
Is that right?
Yep.
Man.
Wow.
Saw Bobby. He's the Eagles special teams coach and just talked to him Monday night.
And then the other one is Alan Lowry. Been a special teams coach.
We keep on going. I mean, anyone else want to talk about it? Right.
Hold on. Let's find out.
No, let's go. That's
all
enough.
Right. Joe, send us to break.
You got it, Brian. Hey, how about celebrating the holidays right here at Latitude 30 and help out a great cause as well? This Saturday, December 1st at 5 o'clock, it's a holiday for heroes. It's a fundraiser right here at Latitude 30. 100% of the proceeds donated are going to go to the Wounded Warrior Project. $30 in advance, $40 at the door. For more information, just go to latitude-30.com. That's latitude-30.com. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Hey, have you booked your holiday party yet? Well, don't just go to another restaurant. Give your event some latitude. How about luxury bowling, play games, live entertainment, and delicious food? Just call Latitude 30's event specialist at 904-324-2455. That's 904-324-2455, and take your event to the next level.
You know, Joe, and you probably meant to mention this, but we're going so fast. There's this Saturday, December the 1st, 5 o'clock, a holiday for heroes. It's a fundraiser at Latitude 30, and 100% of the proceeds are donated to the Wounded Warrior Project.
Very cool.
Obviously, that is a very near and dear effort to a lot of folks here on the First Coast. It's $30 in advance, $40 at the door. So if you're looking for something to do on Saturday night, what better to go out and have a good time and help the Wounded Warrior Project with a holiday for heroes here at Latitude 30.
And then I'm sure if they'll probably give you a cot. You probably just spend the night and be ready right back the next morning for the Jaguar pregame.
Wow. Anything else
you think
like
they sell? I mean, they got great couches out there. I'm sure you just take a little nap and get
they
ready for
breakfast
the next
food here.
I'm sure they would.
Yeah,
this brownie would look pretty good for breakfast.
That would be good.
You haven't touched it.
I'm trying to have discipline.
Is that what that is?
It is.
Okay, yeah. Hold on. I'm getting the schedule
like
up here.
Like you did in Philly.
No, I didn't have that. I did not have any discipline in Philly.
All right, here we
you
go.
Know what? I did. I didn't have three.
Three.
I only had two.
Okay, so here is Thursday night's game: New Orleans at Atlanta.
Great game.
Sure
game.
Is.
I think New Orleans wins that only because they have to.
I'm taking Smitty.
If you followed us all year long, that's his line with Atlanta.
But I mean,
I'm taking Smitty.
I think Atlanta's the better team, but
yeah, Atlanta's been hanging on by a thread lately.
Yeah, and New Orleans has to have.
They may drop one.
Seattle's at Chicago.
I'm taking Smitty. Did I tell you guys?
Yeah, that?
Yeah, no, we got that.
Seattle's at Chicago.
Chicago.
Chicago's on a roll. They're so different with Jay Cutler as opposed to with no Jay Cutler.
Forte's hurt, though.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know if it matters. I really don't know if it matters. And you've got that impending suspension kind of looming over the two corners for the Seattle Seahawks, which has been a little bit of
when they're away from home, they're a different team.
Yeah, it's a conversation, and John's right. They're not the same.
1-5 away from home.
San Francisco at St. Louis.
San Francisco.
I figured that wasn't.
San Francisco.
San Francisco's good.
After watching them the last couple weeks, because we had an opportunity to watch them a little bit, that is a dominant physical football team. I don't care who's playing quarterback. And then Aldon Smith is amazing. He is a great player. And him lined up next to Justin Smith.
Pretty good.
Wow.
And it's amazing that the New York Giants 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago went in there and dominated them.
And we actually talked about this, Brian, when we had a game out there a couple years ago. Sopoaga, the nose tackle, and Justin Smith, and I say about how strong and physical they are. Those two guys.
They curl like 100 pounds.
They work out with 200-pound dumbbells.
Them too.
So, in other words, 200 pounds in one hand, 200 pounds in the other hand, and that's what they work out with.
But they
and
do
that's
they
for
do,
real.
They do curls with 100 in each. That's ridiculous. It. I mean,
you know that's about right,
sure,
Johnny.
That's all right.
Yeah, right.
What did you
ever take?
Let's put this in relative terms. Tony, when you used to do curls like really heavy, let's say you did 6 or 8 reps, what'd you use?
Like 60s, maybe?
Maybe for me it was 55.
65?
These guys are using 100-pound dumbbells.
And then they're using 200 pounds when they're benching. So, yeah. I mean, the most I think I ever use is like 160s.
And
for me,
maybe 140,
I mean,
130. Insane.
Not that bench press or curls makes you a better football player, but they're
makes you a lot stronger football player.
They're just strong. Although we had some guys who benched a lot here that could not play dead.
You always want to take a shot at Brian DeMarco.
I didn't say anyone's name. I just said
you
we had some guys.
We all knew. New England and Miami.
I'm not saying I said him or anything. I'm saying there was
guys. We know
some
what
guys.
You were thinking.
There was guys.
New England at Miami.
New England.
New England's got an opportunity to clinch, and they will.
I'm going to go with Miami.
Really?
Yeah.
He's been
after
on Miami's.
After watching them play?
I think Miami's front seven is really good. I think they're going to – I think New England's offensive line's just okay.
You don't really believe that the Dolphins are going to be the Patriots.
I think Dolphins
are you serious or are you joking?
I'm going to take the Dolphins.
And I'm going to go with some 100-pound curls.
What? I got nothing after that.
Here we go. Arizona at the New York Jets. Who really cares? Indianapolis at Detroit.
That's a good one.
I'm going to go Detroit.
Yeah, I think Detroit knows they're done.
I don't know. That's an interesting one there. That's a really interesting one. And it's in Detroit.
Yeah,
I'm going to take Detroit.
I want Indy just because Chuck Pagano, but I think Detroit wins.
Minnesota at Green Bay.
Green Bay.
Yeah, Green Bay's got some issues, though. But they still have an elite quarterback, and Minnesota has an elite running back. Quarterback usually wins that battle.
I'm not sure Minnesota's pass rush is as good
as
the teams that have given them trouble.
No, they're not.
Could Green Bay get Clay Matthews back this week?
I think it's one more week for some reason, but I'm not sure.
Because they're minus him and minus Charles Woodson.
Right.
And they're going to expect them to have both of them back sometime soon. So.
But for them, it's all about if they can protect Rodgers.
That's it.
Houston at Tennessee. Houston's been to overtime the last 2 weeks.
Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've had 10 days to rest, though.
Okay.
Chris Palmer's not there. That will help the Tennessee offense.
Wow.
That is not enough. Why don't you like chili?
Never have.
All right. I like chili.
We're going to skip Carolina at Kansas City. Tampa Bay at Denver.
I think that's a really good game.
Denver.
It is, but Denver wins that.
Pittsburgh at Baltimore.
Pittsburgh cannot win with Charlie Batch at quarterback.
Why
is he even on the roster? Can somebody help me out?
Because Byron Leftwich is injured.
Yeah, no, but he was there at the beginning.
I know.
You know how much long? You know
you're going to keep a third string quarterback who's how old is Charlie Batch now?
Well, he was 30, drafted in 96, wasn't he?
He couldn't throw 2 years ago.
37 or 38. You know what's interesting about Byron Leftwich? I wonder how much longer they'll stick with him as the backup, because the last few times they've asked him to go play, he's gotten hurt.
Yeah, he gets hurt immediately, which is too bad.
Which is too bad, because Byron's a good guy.
Philadelphia.
So I think the Ravens win that game. Now, there is a report that Ben is starting to throw this week, and he's
going to play.
And he might play. And if he plays, I'll go with Pittsburgh.
He's going to work it for another week, all the drama. Next week he'll play.
Drama queen.
No, but they need him this week. I mean,
yeah, but
this is a must.
Giants at Washington.
I'll go Giants. That's me. Close game, though. RG3 is fun to watch.
They're really good. Giants.
We're out. Thanks, Joe.